Welcome to the Sutphen Seminar's Psychokinesis course. I'm Dick Sutphen, and I'll be teaching you techniques and programming your mind to mentally affect inanimate and remote objects. Psychokinesis is also called PK, or psychokinetic ability, and it can occur spontaneously or deliberately. So it is both an unconscious and conscious process. The most common explorations of PK potentials include levitation, influencing the throwing of dice, controlling random generators, spoon or metal bending, producing visual images on a photograph, the raising or lowering of temperature, splitting or dissolving clouds in the sky, and of course the outright movement of an object. Sometimes even miraculous healings, illuminosities, and the appearance of a porch are credited to someone's psychokinetic ability. Some even believe that curses and weather control can be manifested with PK. The easiest demonstration of PK is probably the pendulum, a weighted object on a string or chain. The questioner dangles the string and locks their hand so it cannot move. In response to a question, the object indicates yes or no by swinging clockwise, counterclockwise, or to an answer written upon a paper. As you explore psychokinesis in depth, it becomes difficult to deny the existence of a very real mental ability. Today, even scientists claim psychokinetic power is a proven phenomenon. But let's begin with the basics. The components of our physical universe are atoms, which in turn are made up of electrons, protons, and neutrons. Now, everything in the universe is made up of this matter and energy. Matter is potential energy. And PK is thought by some scientists to be the ability to affect the energy surrounding matter to generate the desired result. So instead of moving an object with your mind, you're harnessing the surrounding energy to move the object. The term psychokinesis is of Greek origin, meaning motion produced by the mind. And if you care to label some biblical manifestations as PK, occurrences of the phenomena have been documented for a very long time. Even the shackles of Paul and Silas falling away might have been due to a psychokinetic influence. In the 1800s, PK was elaborately investigated in both England and America, primarily in association with spiritualist activities. The ability of the mediums to levitate, move furniture, and produce floating heads and hands was investigated by the British Society for Psychical Research and its American counterpart, the ASPR. And although some fraud was discovered, most of the cases were labeled authentic. Duke University professor J.B. Rhine began conducting his famous PK experiments in 1934. Rhine did establish that people could psychokinetically influence the throwing of dice, and he went on to learn that in any one session, the longer a subject worked at it, the lower the control factor. So fatigue or maybe boredom were valid factors in the ability to demonstrate PK, just as it often is in other psi areas. Psi, PSI, being the undefined force resulting in psychic phenomena. Dr. Rhine coined psi to mean ESP, extrasensory perception, and then later to mean PK and ESP, which he described as a general term to identify a person's extrasensory motor communications with the environment. Dr. Rhine reported that PK did not appear to connect with any physical process of the brain, nor was it subject to the basic laws of physics. He concluded that it was a non-physical force of the mind, and like extrasensory perception, It was independent of space and time. The more Dr. Ryan experimented, the more he realized that extrasensory perception was an important and necessary part of the PK process. So, to develop your psychokinetic abilities, you also need to develop your psychic abilities. ESP is a demonstration of a mental exchange, and PK is a physical influence. The two go hand in hand. The Duke University research established the groundwork for the research conducted by Helmut Schmidt in the late 1960s. Schmidt developed an elaborate coin flipper that could not be fraudulently manipulated. Test subjects were directed to mentally influence the heads or tails coin toss results, which caused light bulbs to go on in one direction or another. And some of the subjects could successfully influence the way the coins landed. This coin tosser was an early version of the random event generator, which is often used to test psychokinetic ability today. Now, about this same time in the late 1960s, the Russians introduced the world to a housewife from Leningrad named Nina Kalagina. Nina even demonstrated to Western scientists her ability to move objects with her mind and to make impressions upon photographic film. Of concern to our military was Nina's supposed ability to affect the heart of a frog. At first, she altered the rate of beating. Then, she completely stopped the frog's heart. Now, if she could do this to a frog, was it conceivable, in time, that someone could learn to do it to a human being? Ingo Swann, the New York artist and psychic who is so well known for his early work with remote viewing at the Stanford Research Institute, demonstrated that he could psychokinetically alter the temperature of an object by a degree or more from as far away as 25 feet. Other experiments demonstrated his ability to affect magnetic fields. In the 25 years I've been investigating and writing about psychic phenomena, I've had a lot of personal experiences with PK. One early experiment is easily replicated by most people with a minimum amount of practice. Fill a bowl or a bucket with water. Then, stick enough nails or weights in a cork so that it just barely sinks to the bottom. Next, visualize the cork levitating. Concentrate upon drawing the cork back up to the surface. Now you'll need to really focus your mind. Allowing any outside thoughts to come in will reduce the effectiveness. I was always most successful when I induced an altered state to run the experiment. And more often than not, I could cause the cork to slowly rise back to the surface and float. Now, I'll be teaching you how to quickly induce an altered state as part of this course. Okay, now here's another exploration of psychokinetic power using water. But this time, fill only a very shallow bowl. Then, cut a small piece of foil about a half inch by 1 inch and bend one end up to create a sail. Now, make sure the water is steady and there are no drafts. Now, place your index finger very close to your little boat, but don't touch it, and mentally command the boat to move either to you or away from you. Another interesting exploration demonstrating the existence of life energy and psychokinesis is conducted with a couple of wire coat hangers. Now, find two thick wire coat hangers and cut and straighten them so that you have two lengths of 30-inch wire. Now, bend down a 5-inch handle on each wire. The next step is to hold the wires, one in each hand, pointing at someone. Or some people prefer to hold both wires in one hand. Now, proper holding takes a little practice at first, but is easily learned. Hold the wires very lightly, just resting in the opening created by closing your fingers into an unclenched fist. The wires must pivot freely. Now, walk very slowly toward the other person. As you come into their energy field, a few inches from their body, the wires will swing all on their own, reacting to the person's life energy. This is a dowsing principle which works for everyone. To demonstrate psychokinesis, have the other person attempt to make the wires swing by sending a thought projection. Now, it will work. You hold the wires and have them think about walking towards you. They should concentrate on imagining themselves walking right up to the wires. And now, once that's working, they'll usually find that a mental command is enough to control the wires. In my book, With Your Spirit Guide's Help, I wrote about experiences with two such wires in a haunted castle in Scotland. In this case, the wires were used to communicate with an earthbound entity. This form of exploration comes under the classification of telekinesis, opposed to psychokinesis. All right, now here's a little more difficult exploration of psychokinesis that I once spent a lot of time upon. A friend had given me a decahedron, a globe made of lightweight sticks forming 10 triangles. Now I hung it in my living room from the cathedral ceiling directly above the couch, so this ball appeared to be floating about 8 feet in the air. Then, with all the doors and windows closed to avoid any drafts, I'd lie beneath the decahedron, relax my body, and count myself down into an altered state of consciousness. Then, I'd open my eyes and begin to command the globe to turn, either clockwise or counterclockwise, always varying the way I willed it to turn. Because it weighed so little and was hanging freely, the globe could easily respond to mental energy. And it worked. It took practice, and the more I practiced, the better it worked. But I definitely moved matter with my mind. As another example of psychokinetic projection, I was once having lunch at Gladstone's restaurant in Malibu with Dr. Patrick Flanagan, the man who introduced the world to pyramid power. We were discussing PK, and to make a point, Patrick placed a drinking straw across the top of a water glass on the table. He then mentally commanded the straw to move, and it did. As an interesting aside, our waitress came to take our food order just as Patrick was demonstrating mind over matter. The shocked woman looked at the moving straw, then at Patrick, whereupon she ran away and refused to return to our table. Metal bending is another demonstration of psychokinesis. I'd heard about how Uri Geller bent keys and silverware even over the radio in England in the early 1970s. But my first personal experience with this phenomena took place several years later in a workshop with Jack Hoek. I'd invited Jack to conduct a spoon-bending party at one of my annual super seminars in Scottsdale, Arizona. In the workshop, for over an hour, Jack talked about the physics of PK. His voice was monotone, and I realized that without ever conducting a hypnotic induction, he was putting the audience into trance. As I always tell the attendees at my professional hypnotist training, the real secret to being a good hypnotist is to talk boring, to talk like you're bored to death, and you'll put everyone to sleep. Anyway, once his audience was in an altered state, he had everyone pick up a spoon and send bending energy into the silverware. Soon, we were all shouting, "Bend, bend, bend," at our spoons. And to my surprise, my spoon just curled over as if it had melted. Now, I looked over at my wife, Tara, and she, too, was looking wide-eyed at her melted spoon. All over the room, the same thing was happening. In the end, almost all the workshop participants did it. And believe me, they did not forcefully bend the spoons to attain the results. After that, Tara and I often included spoon-bending hypnosis during the evening sessions in some of our psychic seminars. By directing hypnotized subjects to mentally bend the spoons, I greatly shortened the time it took to produce the phenomena. And again, almost everyone could successfully bend metal with the power of their mind. The only downside was some of the hotels didn't want us to come back for future seminars, because our participants ended up bending all the restaurant's silverware.